Okay, we're back. And glad you're along. I'm Jeff Rentz. That's R-E-N-S-E. And the website is Rentz.com for news from around the world. News in many cases you'll find a few other places. We try to pull it all together for you to consider in order to help you make the best possible decisions you can make about what works for you on this planet. Michael Roll has been here. Professor Peter Wadhams has retired for the evening. It's very early in the morning over there. And we thank him for being with us tonight. Michael, I'll let you introduce our next guest who will be joining us for this hour, if you would.
Yes, this is John Sampson. He's a member of the Society for Psychical Research. And he's been helping me for a number of years now to present our case, our secular scientific case for survival, to everybody in the world.
Hello, John.
Hello, Jeff. Good evening to you.
Now, if I had a voice like you had, I'd be real famous.
Yes. Well, we can always dream.
See, that's right.
I spend a lot of time broadcasting for the BBC, so maybe it's a...
No, I'm telling you, when John Sampson speaks, I listen immediately.
Very kind of you.
Trying to wake John up. But John has been up all night. John didn't have the, apparently, the luxury of setting his alarm clock. It's been a long evening, has it not?
Yes, it has. I was expecting a call slightly earlier, but there we are. That's the way it goes.
Well, just remember that both Blair and Bush are listening, so you better be good.
Yes, right.
All right. John, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background into the whole field of psychical research.
Well, my background is basically theater. But as I say, I've gone into broadcasting, and I'm a teacher and an examiner and a writer as well. What happened was that 25 years ago, I saw an advertisement in a local newspaper for a spiritual and psychic truth society. Now, I'd always had something in the back of my mind that this was a subject that should be investigated sometime. Anyway, I went along to this particular evening's meeting, and I didn't know whether I was going to find myself in a room full of Fruit Loops or not. Nobody knew me, and I didn't know anybody there, and I thought, well, what I'll do, I'll position myself at the back of this room, which was quite softly lit, right in the back, and I thought I'll just observe the proceedings. And there was a chairman there, a very sort of down-to-earth chap, who introduced a guy who he described as, he said he was a medium, and he'd come from Yorkshire. And so that was that. He stood up and he just began to give a general talk about psychical matters and spiritualism and so on and so forth. He was clairvoyant and clairaudient, this fella. Then began to talk to individual members of the audience, again, a very matter-of-fact, down-to-earth way. And I heard all this, and members of the audience seemed to respond to what he was saying. That was all very fine. And then he said, just before he sat down, he said, I need to come to someone right at the back of the room. Now, as I say, I positioned myself right in the corner. And there were three fellas sitting next to me. And the fellow two away from me said, do you mean me? And he said, no. And the one next to him said, do you mean me? He said, no. Nope. So I began to gulp, and I thought, oh, dear. And then he came to the one next to me, and the chap next to me said, do you mean me? No. So I was the only one left. So
Trapped.
So I kind of croaked and said, do you mean me? Yes, he said, you immediately. And he began simply to talk to me about what I was thinking, really, and what my sort of state of mind was, and what my kind of philosophy was, and why I was there that evening. And he was fairly accurate. It was quite impressive. Mm-hmm. But it was a generalized stuff. Mm-hmm. After the meeting closed, I thought I'd have a word with this guy. So I went up, had a chat with him, and said, look, I'm interested, because I positioned myself in such a way that you couldn't even see me. So how did you know anyone was there? And then he said, well, I work with a light. And I said, what do you mean, a light? And he said, well, I just have this clairvoyance and a light. I see a light over the person I have to speak to, and I knew there was someone there, although I couldn't see you, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Anyway, after that, I spoke to the chairman, and I said, look, can you recommend anything to read on this subject? I am interested. And he said, well, there's quite an imposing volume. It's called A History of Psychic Science and Philosophy. I can't remember the author at the moment, but it was he lent me this. It was a rather imposing volume.
Mm-hmm.
And it was written by a guy whose only other book was on shipbuilding. And I thought, well, he's got to be fairly sort of a pragmatic fellow. He's not an airy-fairy. So I read this book, and I was very impressed by the detail of it, and it seemed very well-researched, and opened my eyes to many things in the world of the psychic and spiritualism, mediumship, and so on and so forth. And really, that was the genesis of my interest, and from that moment on, I read more and sat with several mediums, and the interest developed from there. And I had no idea that it was such an enormous subject. It tends to be marginalized and thought of really as a branch of entertainment.
True.
And downgraded in many ways. But this was a real eye-opener, and that's where it all began. And subsequently, I became a member of the College of Psychic Studies in London, which was founded in 1884, and they have a library of 12,000 books, some of them written by very eminent men in their own field. And after that, the Society for Psychical Research, as you mentioned, I'm also a member of that. And that's really the background to it. And then, in the course of my reading, I stumbled on Michael Rowell's work and thought, well, this is making a great deal of sense. Because the secular approach seemed to be very, very important, and to take some of the religious associations out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so I read further, and that's really what happened. And I then met Ron Pearson. I was very impressed by Ron Pearson. Mind you, I have to say, I'm not a mathematician. Actually, just as a side to this, that years ago I met a medium who was pretty good, and he said something to me which made me laugh at the time, and I thought, this is really rib-cracking, because he said, you know, John, he said, one day you're going to be interested in this subject from the point of view of physics.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what? He said, mm-hmm. Yes. He said, you're going to be in... And I said, well, my old math teacher would laugh himself sick to hear that, you know, because he must have thought I was... I was a real
Yeah, I can understand, sure.
You know, so I said, what happens years later, and I find Michael's work, and there you are, to do with subatomic physics. So that was pretty so prescient of this guy that, you know, he spotted that.
But you've been at this over a quarter century now, and as you look back on the progression, have you ever run into an impediment, or has it been one continually enlarging field of awareness and discovery for you?
Well, they say about this subject there's a great deal of fraudulence and charlatanism, et cetera, et cetera. And there is a certain amount. In my experience, I've discovered more self-delusion, I think, than conscious fraud.
Ah.
I think there are a lot of people out there who say, oh, I'm a psychic. And in fact, they may have a gift to some extent, but it's very undeveloped.
Right. A lot of people do. And they as you say, they don't develop it. And it's just a little thing they pull out from time to time, or it sneaks up and presents itself to them. And in a way, that's unfortunate, because a lot of people, I think, had they the ability and the foresight and the wisdom to develop this ability, there would be, I think, a lot more people doing some remarkable work now. But be that as it may, we'll be right back with Michael Rowell and John Sampson in just a couple of minutes, and take a look at some more of those remarkable pictures. Continue. Michael Rowell is here, John Sampson is here, and I'm negotiating with John to rent his voice for at least a week when he's on vacation. Is that okay with you, John?
Oh, absolutely right, yes.
Can you imagine if I could speak with such grandeur and such articulated intelligence? It's amazing. Nothing like an English accent. Nothing.
Oh, you're very complimentary.
Well, listen to that. He just rolls those words out there. All right. Now, Michael Rohl, let's go back and look at some more pictures here.
Right.
See if I can get my page to come back up. There it is. Now, these pictures, again, if you're new to the program or just in late, go to the guests box and click on photographs. We're going to scroll down the page there and pick up. There are several interesting pictures further on down. Let me see if I can find them again. Now, the one, there it is. Let's look under photograph. Let's look for photograph number one under Professor, this is a great name, Baron von Schrenck-Notzing. Let's say that for me, Michael.
Yes, I've got it in front of me here. Baron von Schrenck-Notzing.
All right. Yes. Do we know much about the Baron?
He was a professor, and he wrote a book, Phenomenon of Materializations, published in 1923.
Uh-huh.
If you see his book, it's hundreds of photographs that he's taken. And, of course, he had a German scientific team, like Crookes had an English team. He had a German team.
There was a parallel effort going on in Germany.
Absolutely.
Right?
And then Professor Charles Richet, a Nobel laureate for medical science, he published his book, 30 Years of Psychical Research. And this Nobel laureate for medical science said there is ample proof that experimental materializations should take definite rank as a scientific fact. This is wonderful stuff.
Now, this is a Nobel Prize winner,
yeah,
folks.
1917 Nobel laureate for medical science. These are top scientists.
Yeah,
Then there's the Canadian team, Dr. Glenn Hamilton. Intention and Survival, published in 1942. He set up a battery of about 15 cameras photographing materializations. And incidentally, Tom Jones has got all this on his website.
He's got
the full book there of Glenn Hamilton.
It's all there. And all of you can visit anytime. If you're not online now, just remember survivalafterdeath.org. Survivalafterdeath.org. All right, now, John Sampson, you've looked at these photographs many times. These are, again, Professor Albert Baron von Schrenck-Notzing's photographs, photograph number one. And I'll just read for you who are not online what it's about. It's a black and white photograph, shows a woman sitting in a chair. She's wearing all what appears to be black or a dark color. Her left hand and right hand are stretched out from her. They're draped over the arms of the chair. It's kind of an easy chair. And her hands are clearly being held by a person on either side of her. You can't see who they are, but you see her facing the camera physically, but her head is turned to her right, and we're seeing the side of her face, which is in rather a grimace, and she's not laughing, let's put it that way. She's obviously working hard at doing something, and what that something is bizarre. And the photograph description reads, "Here we see the materialization medium Eva C. producing ectoplasm, or teleplasm, as it is often referred to, under controlled test conditions. Those present at this experiment carried out the 13th of March 1911, including Madame Bisson, Bisson's sister, Professor Charles Richet, Madame de Fontenary, and Professor Schrenck-Notzing. They're all there. Skeptics often complain that genuine psychic phenomena has not been repeated in any laboratory anywhere in the world. Therefore, science cannot accept it. However, the vast majority are completely unaware that in Professor Schrenck-Notzing's book, Phenomena of Materialization, there are some, as you heard Michael Rohl say, 225 ectoplasm photographs, all performed under strict controlled test conditions. This does not include the experiments carried out by scientists such as Dr. Charles Richet, Sir William Crookes, Dr. Glenn Hamilton, Gustav Gallais, and W.J. Crawford, to name just a few. In this photograph below, Eva C.'s left hand is being held by Dr. Charles Richet and her right by Professor Schrenck-Notzing himself. So, John Sampson, describe this photograph for us, would you?
I haven't actually got it in front of me, I'm afraid.
Well, it's the woman in a trance, or she's straining, and there's clearly ectoplasm coming around the left shoulder, over the top, down across the right side of her chest, and draping across her lap.
Yeah, yeah.
You remember that photograph?
Yeah, as I do indeed. Of course, the interesting thing here is that Charles Richer, you may have been told this already, was the one who, in fact, gave the name ectoplasm. He was the one who coined the term ectoplasm, and indeed he I think at one point managed to secure some of it and analyze it as well. Which was quite a difficult thing to do, but the it's interesting the way that energy, which comes out of the medium and also comes out of the sitters to some extent, and is chemically transformed into this substance, to which he gave the name ectoplasm, and can be formed as a clothing to the communicator, the communicator, whoever it is who wants to come through. But it is. I learned this very early on in my investigation. It, of course, materialization is the rarest form of mediumship, and for a long time really had just passed out of the subject, because there's no one around to do it, and no one would seem to be able to do this this kind of mediumship, because it can be dangerous, and it's very it can be very exhausting for the medium. And that's why I think mediums nowadays are very reticent about putting themselves on the line or allowing investigators in, because they are very, very vulnerable. And in fact, I sat with a medium just a few weeks ago who I think will be a very good materialization medium. And I sat in the circle, and although it wasn't visible, it was a dark room seance. One could hear people walking around, and it was quite clear that all the people sitting there had joined their hands together, not for any kind of reason other than that to make sure nobody was moving. Huh. So everyone knew where everyone was, so there was no way anyone else could get up and start prancing around. In this particular seance, one could hear children, the sound of feet moving around, and voices, young voices. And as I was a guest at this, the medium was in the curtained off cabinet, and strapped down. I checked the ties myself to make sure this medium was absolutely immobilized, couldn't move at all. And then these children were heard moving around, and one came up to me and took my hand. And the interesting thing was, It was a small hand, and it was warm, and just as a child's hand would be, and introduced himself. He was a Cockney who died about 1900, Cockney boy, and interestingly enough, the phrase he used was, "It's nice to meet you, mister." And that's not a phrase people would use nowadays. It was nice to meet you, mister.
Interesting, interesting. Stand by right there, John. We have a break to do here. We'll come right back and rejoin you in just a couple of minutes. For those of you online able to see the images at survivalafterdeath.org, take a look, browse around. Pretty interesting. Okay, we're back with John Sampson and Michael Roll. Now, you're in the seance, John, and is it standard operating procedure for seances to be held in the dark or nearly in the dark? And if so, why?
Yes, that's what one of the first questions I asked when I first went into this subject. And it was explained to me that white light has a deleterious effect on phenomena. It's the same principle as if you try and develop a photograph in daylight. You have to develop a photograph in the dark. It's just one of those things and gives rise quite naturally to an awful lot of suspicion and questioning. But that's basically the reason for it. But some mediums, if they're strong enough, can perform in soft light or red light, mm-hmm. and you can actually see. In fact, while you were just there for a moment offline, I looked at some photographs, which I have here. It's a sequence of six photographs. And it's this and the following, actually seven photographs. This and the following sequence of seven photographs depict the whole process of materializing a spirit form. They were taken in about 30 minutes. An assistant holds the curtain to reveal the entranced medium, Ethel Post Parish of Pennsylvania, USA. A cloudy pillar of ectoplasm slowly builds from the medium to the height of a full-grown woman. Gradually, the ectoplasm solidifies until finally, the full figure emerges completely materialized. This is Silver Bell, an Indian girl, said to be the medium's spirit guide. And these photographs, like the ones you have in front of you, are quite spectacular, because you can see the cloud slowly forming itself into a figure. It's very tricky to take photographs of this kind, which is why infrared is now being put forward as a solution to the problem. But that also has its difficulties, I believe, from the medium's point of view.
Well, you'd have to use a flash, and that may interfere.
The thing is about what happens is if light is suddenly, if there is a sudden burst of light, what tends to happen is the ectoplasm goes rushing back into the medium, which can cause great deal of physical damage. And this is why they are now so wary, of allowing cameras in.
Well, that's what happened to Helen Duncan.
That's what happened to Helen Duncan, and also because that was disrupted, the seance was disrupted, yes, by a raid, by a police raid, and torchlight came in, and that caused a great deal of trouble. But there's also a further development now. I don't know whether you know the Skoll report, and the which caused quite a stir in this country, which was conducted by senior members of the Society of Psychical Research.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it was a group in Norfolk, and they had been two mediums there, and two others had been exploring the possibility of developing a kind of energy which was not ectoplasmic. Ectoplasmic coming out of, because if you analyze ectoplasm, in fact, the chemical constituents of ectoplasm are all human. They're all found in the human body. Mm-hmm. Now, and because this can cause damage to the medium, what they're doing now is, in the Skoll, the Skoll group was trying to find, or rather their communicants from the other side were trying to develop a form of pure energy which could be used to produce phenomena without endangering the medium in any way. And they got so far with it, and then the group had to break up and dissolve, and it wasn't able to proceed and go any further. But so really, ectoplasm, of course, is the traditional way of doing it, but it does have its dangers and its problems, and also the fact that so much of the phenomena has to be in darkness. So therefore, they've got to find a way of recording this, photographing this, without causing any damage to the medium. But the seance I attended in January, although you couldn't see them, you could certainly feel, because a man came and approached me and seized my hand and shook it, and it was a gnarled, burly sort of hand.
He lifted your hand up and shook it.
A working man's hand, and he pumped it vigorously and spoke to me and introduced himself.
Was there room in front of you for someone to be standing?
Oh, yes. Because it was not an enormous room. It was a timber structure, and about 20 feet by 15, I guess. But it wasn't sort of enormous. But there's plenty of room for the guy to be in front of me.
Could you hear him walking and approach?
Yes, you could hear him walk about. And he spoke to others, and his voice came towards you. So had he been the medium faking this, it would have been very difficult.
So there was a definite directional sense to the voice. I mean, it was right in front of you.
That's right. And he came and pumped my hand, as indeed the boy came right up. Mm-hmm. And Another interesting thing that happened here was they put writing paper on the floor of the on the floor of the room before the seance began, and I could hear this. We could all hear this being ruffled at one point, and the sound of a pencil over it. And then shortly afterwards, I was aware of a small hand pulling my jumper. I had a polo neck jumper, pulled the jumper forward. The neck forward, and that paper being stuffed on the front of my sweater.
Really?
I thought, I wonder what that's about. But anyway, so the seance went on, and then it came to an end, and what happened at the end was a great crash. When the lights went out, the medium and the chair in which he was sitting had suddenly been transported from behind the cabinet curtain into the middle of the room. And the cardigan he was wearing had been completely reversed, and that had been tied in such a way it could not be done without undoing all these fastenings, and that had been completely reversed. It was just a demonstration of their power and their facility, what they can do. But then subsequently I remembered this. I remember this paper in my sweater, pulled it out, and opened it up. It had been folded into four. Opened it up, and there, in childlike handwriting, was the name A. C. Doyle.
Oh,
Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah.
Now, and you know, have his great interest in the subject. Now, what that signifies, I don't know. Whether he was trying to say.
What a strange communication. Now, this crash you heard, was that? We're to believe that was the sound of the medium and his chair being set down in front of you in the room. Bang.
What happened is it came from the corner of the room. It kind of flies through the air and crashes down in the middle of the room without hurting the medium at all. It's just it's like enormous strength, of course, required to do this. But ectoplasmic energy can be extraordinarily powerful if it's used in that way.
Did the chair break?
Nope. It was just that the chair flew out of the cabin and crashed down in the middle of the room. That's what must have happened. There's no other way it could have happened, because everyone else was absolutely immobilized around the corner, the sides of the room.
I see.
And it was just, in fact, it's the way they traditionally end this kind of seance. It's just a show, I think, of the extent of the power that they do have. And I don't know why, in a way, they do this, but another medium called Jack Webber, who was a famous medium way back in the 30s, again, had his jacket taken off and put around the wrong way and everything, and he was tied in the chair. He couldn't do anything. It's just a demonstration of what they're able to do. But I'd never seen it before myself, so it was quite interesting to see that.
A.C. Doyle.
A.C. Doyle, written in large childlike handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And it was obviously a child who was doing it. I could tell by the size of the hand that was pushing this into my, was a small hand.
Had you reached out, what do you think you would have encountered? What would your expectations be?
If I'd reached out towards the child.
Yes.
Well, the arm might have ended sort of halfway up and just then become a space. Or, because sometimes it depends on the level of the power. Sometimes they can only materialize a part of the body, and sometimes the whole of the body. For example, I run meetings here in Sussex, and I had a chap who was in his 80s, and he had a lot of experience, because his mother was a medium, and someone came back in one of their seances, and it was a relation, and she came back with only half her. She came from her, shall we say, from her kneecaps up. She didn't come back any, but she came back with what was necessary to manifest properly. But this is quite usual, that only a part of the body is materialized.
All right. Stand by, and we'll continue in just a couple of minutes. And do take a look at some of those rather compelling pictures as you get a chance. Back in just a minute.
the Jeff Rentz program continues.
Okay, and we're back. Michael Roll, these photographs, the more you look at them, the more intriguing they become. The photographs are just two up there from Dr. Charles Richet. The Baron von Schrenck-Notzing photographs are up there. We've looked at a couple of those. There is even a comparison of the medium's hair and the materialized being's hair. There were hairs taken. That's called physical evidence, is it not?
Oh, indeed, yes. And also, if you remember, John Logie Baird in his book tells how they took the fingerprints of somebody who materialized and compared them to the prints on the dead body, and they were identical. That's in John Logie Baird's book. But I'd like to enlarge on what John was saying about the chair leaping out of the cabinet.
Now, tell me, if a lot of people are saying, what does he mean, cabinet? What does he mean, cabinet?
Oh, well, so some mediums, some materialization mediums have to go into a cabinet to get the energy concentrated, I take it. That's what they do. But Rita Gould didn't have that. She just sat in a chair.
It's just a little wooden a box, they say.
Yeah, it's a little wooden to concentrate the energy, I take it. But right. Some mediums have it, others don't. Rita Gould didn't. But at the Rita Gould experiment, the etheric scientist teleported a great big easy chair with a cat asleep on it from one room into the room where the people were, and it suddenly materialized in the middle of the room. And the cat was unhurt. It was perfectly all right. But this is the type of thing that Professor Gary Schwartz will be able to get on film, you see. He'll arrange this with the etheric scientist, so they'll have a whole stack of cameras watching the chair disappear, then they'll have a batch of cameras watching it reappear in another room. This is the type of experiment that can be done once we get cracking. I hope John can persuade this medium that he sat with recently, when the medium is fully developed and ready, to fly across to America, and away we go. It'd be great. But judging by what John was saying, he's not quite as advanced yet as Rita Gould was, but maybe that will come in the future.
And as we have talked about earlier, maybe there are some people listening right now who have very quietly been developing and have kept it private, and that's understandable. How would you suggest people go about contacting you or Dr. Gary Schwartz, I guess? Either one would work.
Well, they can contact us at our website, and yourself as well, at the Rentz website, and
sure.
Then we can put them in touch with Gary Schwartz. But please don't waste our time. They must be full materialization mediums walking around the room, and they must be as solid and as natural as we are and talking to us in like we talk to each other. We're not interested in having to develop mediums. We haven't got the time to do that, or the scientists haven't got the time to do that.
The last photographs on this page, Professor Gustav Gelay, is that Gelay? Gelay?
Gelay, yes.
Gelay, okay. Gelay. Well, his interesting photographs. There's a picture of he and Stanley DeBroth with someone materializing between them, and then Professor Gelay died in a plane crash and came back 3 weeks later and appeared in a photograph with three of his associates.
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
No. You can see his face right there floating above them.
That's right. When you read this subject, death holds no fear whatsoever. It's a tremendous adventure.
Wow.
Which is wonderful when you read this subject.
John Sampson, what about a seance like you just described with some kind of infrared cameras at work? Would that video, would that sit well with the medium?
That seems to be, at the moment, a sticking point. I don't quite know why it is, but I think low image intensifiers and infrared, I think, will be a possibility. I'm a bit baffled at the moment as to why they're so wary about this, except that I'm talking to the medium after the seance, that it's amazing how little can cause damage. And he was saying that even the slightest impulse of light can sometimes cause scorches and burns.
Well, because we can't see infrared doesn't mean that others don't see it as well.
Well, that's right. But I'm quite sure that, because after all, we have these, the photographs you've been talking about and the photographs that I have in front of me now, and if they were able to do that then, mm-hmm. surely they must be able now with the more sophisticated equipment available.
I would think so, and I would also think that in time, it's going to probably come to be a necessary part of any validation.
Yes.
That something has to be done in of a technological nature to really put a foundation under these things.
When I called in Professor Archie Roy, the etheric scientist gave him permission to bring in the infrared cameras. Then they would never have given permission for that to happen if they thought it would be a danger to the medium.
Uh-huh.
So we needn't worry about that. The etheric scientists call the tune. We don't do anything without them saying okay. That protects the medium, you see,
Jeff. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true. I mean, everything has to come from their side. They do have to give the green light on these things. But I'm sure that if a medium develops a powerful enough, develops the gift well enough that it can be done. And certainly this chap I was with, I'm sure that eventually he'll get to the stage where this can be done. It's just, I think too, there's something else which we haven't spoken about, and perhaps Michael has mentioned this earlier. The trouble with the Society for Psychical Research is they're very clinical and analytical in their approach. And there has been a kind of suspicion that has grown up between mediums and the Society for Psychical Research. And so that's another reason why they can be a little wary, because quite a few of them are very sort of skeptical, very negative, and this is seen as hostility.
Mm-hmm.
And that, because there's something else, another expression which I met very early in my inquiries, and it's called mental atmosphere, that in fact the harmony that's necessary for these kind of things to happen, a circle can sometimes take many, many years to develop.
Well, thoughts are energy, of course.
Exactly so. And mm-hmm. you introduce an inquirer or an investigator who is not actually on really the sympathetic wavelength, and that it's amazing how disruptive that can be. For example, there are a couple of people I could mention in the Society for Psychical Research at a senior level, that when they go to seances which are very successful, their mere presence diminishes the phenomena because of the atmosphere and attitude they bring with them
uh-huh.
in the seance room.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite incredible how this can happen. That's another reason, I think, why it's... someone described to me a long time ago, a very wise fella described to me what mediumship was like. And he said, if you imagine a perfect reflection of a full moon in a completely still lake, that is what mediumship is, not the faintest ripple caused by the lightest breeze to disturb the image.
Yeah,
that is
true.
That's how delicate mediumship mm. is. Mm. So if someone comes in who is not totally in sympathy,
mm-hmm.
That is the kind of effect they can have.
Rustles the waters, and it wouldn't... I can understand. It makes sense. John, we're just about out of time. Thanks so much for sacrificing most of a night's sleep, and I hope you can catch up with some of it.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to talk to you, Jeff.
Mine indeed. Take care.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
And Michael Roll, my thanks to you on behalf of a lot of people for doing what you do. It's a difficult business, but as you said at the beginning of the program, the tides have turned now, and we're on a different course.
Thanks for what you're doing, Jeff.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Take care, my friend.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Bye-bye.
Michael Roll, and our thanks to all three guests tonight for holding forth so magnificently, and literally in the middle of the night in the U.K., All right, and thanks to you for being here this evening. Lots to think about. Do look at those pictures and consider them as well. We shall pause for 21 hours and be right back with you tomorrow night.